Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. During World War II, news from the front was broadcast on radio. Television, famously, and maybe decisively, brought the havoc of the Vietnam conflict home to Americans on the evening news. Scenes of destruction and carnage in serious civil war are uploaded every day on YouTube. This one is from late February, showing what appears to be a direct hit on a Russian tank by a rebel group that claimed credit for posting the video. Thousands of similar videos reveal assaults, bombings, skirmishes, and their blood-soaked aftermaths in the multi-sided battle now playing out on several Syrian fronts. The Carter Center's Syria Mapping Project has been connecting these disparate dots of video to better understand the complicated and brutal conflict. Chris McNabow is manager of the project for the Carter Center, and we reached him via Skype. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be here.
So the Carter Center started using YouTube videos to analyze the conflicts in Syria and Libya 4 years ago now. How much is being uploaded?
My estimations, it appears that there are more minutes of video than of real time coming out of Syria.
So what kinds of things are you looking for when you're analyzing this data, and how are you tagging it and cataloging it so other people can understand it?
Well, because of the difficulty of there being so much information, we started out focusing on the smallest yet most impactful pieces that we could handle. In the beginning, in 2012, for us, that was just following defections, trying to understand the rate of defections from the military, answering bigger questions like, is the military going to collapse in any fundamental way? And what's the opposition starting to look like? In the end of 2012, we partnered with a team of researchers who had been documenting a lot of the armed group formation videos. We brought them on board and we expanded yet again. From there, we've started looking at sightings of sophisticated weaponry or weapons that might have been foreign supplied, and taking a look at how they flow through opposition networks. And more recently, with the advent of new tools, we've been able to track broader swaths of data and look at demonstrations and ongoing narratives, more conflict and videos of violence in general, and branch away from just those little bits that we were able to comprehensively handle in the beginning.
So you're able to identify things like, you know, you can see the uniform someone is wearing or the flag that they're flying under. How about weapons? Where are they coming from? These kind of supplies, food, that kind of thing. Can you tell what's happening from videos?
The formation videos that we've been tracking, we've been documenting up to 70 different attributes for each video, including, you know, the style of uniform, where it was shot, how many people, types of weapons seen. And when you start getting enough of that information, so for example, you mentioned weapons, that's where more traditional journalism comes in. You start researching who has supplies of these weapons in the region, where they're appearing in the country first, you know, if it's right next to the Iraqi border or the Turkish border or the Jordanian border, and trying to trace them back to a point of origin. Sometimes if you get a serial number from a weapon, it makes it very easy for you. But oftentimes it's putting together a whole bunch of different puzzle pieces to try and get a fuzzy picture.
Well, traditional journalism, of course, is the challenge here because there are very few people covering things in Syria. We know from the capture and then execution of James Foley from right here in New Hampshire, you know, that getting somebody to actually be able to report is really challenging. So does this become, in a way, journalism?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the people on the ground would say that they're journalists as well. It's not just Western journalists that go and put themselves at risk in Syria. If you look at a lot of these videos, you'll find people pointing the cameras down the barrel of a tank. You know, it's like Tiananmen Square, but from a whole different perspective. People are uploading this sometimes for political reasons. Sometimes it's the soapbox of an armed group or another, but oftentimes because they want the world to know what's going on.
Well, let's just hear an example here. Here's a video. This was marked as being uploaded in an area that was covered by the ceasefire that began in early February. This one dated March 3rd. So during the period of officially negotiated ceasefire. That's just an example of video from the Syrian conflict uploaded by citizens or rebels or soldiers or militants. By our guest Chris McNabo's estimation, there are more minutes of video of the Syrian conflict than there actually have been real-time moments of the conflict. So what do you do with all that? Well, Chris is manager of the Carter Center's Syria Mapping Project. They're using digital tools to catalog those videos and chart and report on the multi-sided conflict. Well, I have to admit, you know, looking through several videos from this conflict, a lot of things struck me. First, there just is this maze of content. I have no way of verifying who's uploading it. I don't read Arabic. So how do you source and make sure of the veracity of the videos that are being uploaded?
Well, our main focus is not to try and verify everything that's coming out. There's just too much content. We don't currently have the capacity to verify absolutely everything. But what we can do is we can use that as one of many sources and focus instead of on verification, on corroboration of information. And when we get videos of conflict happening in a place, oftentimes we can find it with satellite imagery. We can confirm that, yes, this is where a video was shot. If we also get reports of the conflict coming through activist networks or reporting networks, if we get reports of civilians being displaced from the same area, then we have a lot more confidence in what's actually happening. But it is an imperfect science, and the reflection that we see on social media is an imperfect reflection. So it's an ongoing challenge for us to sort through all of those uncertainties and difficulties in verifying what we see.
In other words, this kind of information might be helpful in, say, delivering humanitarian aid, for example, or knowing where the front was, but not something that the Department of Defense or CIA or a news organization might use for intelligence.
Well, certainly this information is useful for humanitarian distribution, understanding where the conflict is going and using that to try and respond to it and address it. But we have seen these videos used for military purposes. There's certainly that intent. For example, in the beginning of the conflict, there were some people who put live webcams on the rooftops so that they could show incoming artillery or planes or whatever was happening at the time. It didn't take long before people found those live streams and started targeting mortars towards them. The content being uploaded is uploaded for a wide variety of reasons, but it can also be used for just as wide a variety of reasons. Another example, in eastern Damascus, in the beginning of the conflict, we saw people uploading videos of what looked like man pads, these man portable air defense systems, which if it were true, it would have been a game changer in the beginning of the conflict. But it turns out that the air raids didn't stop on that area. The models of man pads that these opposition groups were holding up appeared to be fake or training models. So there's a lot of misinformation that goes out, and there's an intent behind it as well to not just pursue a political agenda, but oftentimes a military one as well.
This is one of the things that really struck me, that these videos are being uploaded. Of course, people want, as you said, the citizen journalist, the bystander, often want people to know what's going on in Syria. And I remember these messages a couple of years ago saying, you know, help, we need your help. But now I wonder, I mean, we know that ISIS is using videos from the conflict as propaganda and recruiting tools. Do you have any sense that the rebel groups are also catching on to that, sort of curating videos for foreign observers? I saw, you know, montages of the greatest explosions in the Syrian conflict and began to think, wow, this is taking on completely a life of its own.
I think everyone who's uploading videos is doing so with an agenda. That might not have been the case very early in the conflict, but people have understood or have come to understand the power of information. And this conflict is really taking place as much in the digital sphere as it is in the physical, on the ground, everyday lives of Syrians. There will be inaccuracies in videos that are uploaded. There will be an intent behind it or a political agenda in what it is that's being uploaded. But the amount of content, the sheer amount of content, means that you can begin to triangulate some sort of a truth between these different videos. You can start sorting through them and pulling out sometimes maybe not the whole message, but basic facts of where conflict is happening, where videos are being shot. It's hard to fake a large group of armed men storming a city. It's hard to fake tanks shooting at a city or airplanes above it. There are still useful bits of information that we can find in this mess of data.
So this montage tool that you're using, you're asking for some help from the public. This is a Google tool, have I got that right, or something that a Google tech incubator developed?
This was originally developed by Google Ideas following a conference that they held in 2013 called Conflict in a Connected World. The tool has gone through a couple different iterations. We've been testing it out for quite a while, but now it's been made public. As I was saying, the amount of information that's out there really requires a concerted effort from a large number of people. And if Syrians are really uploading this information, these videos, because they want the world to know what's going on, then we can help get that message out. We can help curate what would be an insurmountable amount of information and distill the story.
Well, we know the Carter Center has done a lot of work in humanitarian causes, in conflict resolution. How do you see this project working into your larger mission?
Well, this project was a bit of a departure from the norm for us. We really don't do too much think tank type work. We're really on the ground. But in the case of Syria, it's very difficult to be on the ground. And we started noticing a gap in people's analysis of the conflict. People weren't taking advantage of a lot of the new information that was coming out. And so we really tried to lean into that space and see if it could supplement our own work on the political side of conflict resolution in Syria. But also could contribute to broader humanitarian efforts. And it's certainly something that we're looking at applying to areas elsewhere. The conflict in Syria may be the first conflict to exist in such a connected environment, but it certainly won't be the last.
Chris McNabo, manager of the Carter Center's Syria Mapping Project, thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
There's more on the project, including maps and timelines and a series of reports from the Syria Mapping Project so far. All that information is at wordofmouthradio.org.